The spirit of adventure seemed at a very low ebb throughout the household. The only person who now appeared to have it to any marked degree was Mr. Bagthorpe himself, who, being now gripped by the notion of survival, was fast spiraling out of control. "The summer house will be converted to a chicken house," he informed everybody, the idea having just occurred to him. "We shall thus have the benefit of free-range eggs." "But if the hens are roaming about free, they'll eat all the lettuce and salads," objected Rosie. "Do not bother me with irksome details," Mr. Bagthorpe told her. "I am concerned with evolving a master plan for survival. It will be up to you lot to see to the details. I read an article recently about how to generate electricity from sewage and dung. You, William, had better look into it. At last, your expensive and heretofore pointless interest in electricity will pay off." "It's not electricity, it's electronics," William protested. "They're two separate things." Mr. Bagthorpe could not be brought to see this. A man who will not carry a computer, despite his lack of arithmetic, because he insists that it is giving off dangerous radioactive rays inside his pocket, is unlikely to appreciate any fine shades of meaning in the scientific field. "Electricity, electronics, what's the difference?" he said. "I am disappointed in the way you are all reacting. There will be no malingering. It is also possible to generate electricity from a windmill, and you had better look into that as well. We cannot afford to waste anything, even the wind." There now fell a silence, a rare occurrence at a Bagthorpe meal. Everyone present, with the exception of Grandma and Mr. Bagthorpe himself, was now thoroughly frightened. It was becoming clearer by the minute that Mr. Bagthorpe was in deadly earnest. There was not even any point in sending for Dr. Winters. He had made it clear enough in the past that he thought Mr. Bagthorpe mad, and that he was not interested in treating this condition. He probably thought it untreatable. The silence was eventually broken by the sound of spurting gravel from the other side of the house. Mrs. Bagthorpe instantly leaped up and hurried to greet the visitors. "Russell, Celia, thank heaven you're here," Jack heard her say. "Do come and see if you can do anything with Henry." "He has not, I hope, been standing on his head again," came Uncle Parker's voice. "I can hear you," yelled Mr. Bagthorpe. "Come on in here. It's no good hatching things up out there." Mrs. Bagthorpe re-entered, followed by Uncle Parker, Aunt Celia, and Daisy, the latter almost totally eclipsed by a large, beribboned parcel. "Hello, all," Uncle Parker greeted them affably. "Hello, Grandma. Daisy's got something for you." Daisy advanced and plonked her parcel in front of Grandma, dislodging a plate as she did so. It fell to the floor and shattered. "Oh, dear," squealed Daisy. "You will pay for that, Russell," said Mr. Bagthorpe. "We can no longer afford to underwrite your daughter's destructive behavior. Does she go anywhere without wreaking havoc?" "Hush, Henry," cried Aunt Celia. "Daisy has an offering for Mother. Do not spoil the moment." "Here you are, Grandma Bag," squeaked Daisy. "It's for you, and it's a surprise because the other one got broke." The Bagthorpes watched numbly as Grandma pulled off the wrappings. They knew well what to expect. Uncle Parker had obviously commissioned a second pot replica of the late and sainted Thomas to replace the one that had crashed in a shower of maggots at the family reunion. As the final tissues fell aside, their fears were confirmed. The present offering was, if anything, larger, gingerier, and more malevolent-looking than its predecessor. "It is beautiful!" cried Grandma predictably. "Oh, darling Daisy! The child is an angel!" No one said anything to this, because the statement was not even debatable. Daisy was not an angel. She was, on the contrary, as all the Bagthorpes knew to their cost, the inevitable harbinger and purveyor of doom. Her influence was such that Mr. Bagthorpe had once suggested, in all seriousness, that what she really needed was exorcising. He had even offered to telephone the rector himself and arrange the ceremony. "Desperate situations need desperate remedies," he had asserted. "Bell, book, and candle is our last ditch." "It's from Arioch as well," Daisy burbled, hopping from foot to foot. "And we're going to look for a real Thomas for you, Daddy says." Grandma had no opportunity to voice her thanks to Arioch, even if she had been so disposed, because Mr. Bagthorpe's aura was in a flash. "He is what?" he demanded. "Thought it more or less my moral duty, do you see?" explained Uncle Parker, who had been looking forward to observing Mr. Bagthorpe's reaction to this news. Uncle Parker's two main interests in life were driving round the countryside in a fast car like a bat out of hell, and goading Mr. Bagthorpe. The former practice had resulted, some years previously, in the untimely death in the drive of Unicorn House of Thomas, a villainous Ginger Tom who had, Grandma maintained, been the light of her life. She also asserted that he was irreplaceable, which was why Uncle Parker had not immediately offered to replace him. He had, after allowing a suitable period of mourning, cunningly had a life-size replica made in pottery of the original Thomas as a gift to Grandma, with the intention of following this up by the real thing. Nothing, he knew, would enrage Mr. Bagthorpe more. Even without the knowledge that the latter had now embarked on a master plan for survival, in which there would be no place for non-productive livestock. "Moral duty?" echoed Mr. Bagthorpe incredulously. "Moral? Do you even know the meaning of the words?" "I will look them up the moment I return home," Uncle Parker promised. "What do you say, Grandma? What about another shining, purring jewel of a cat?" "Aha!" yelled Mr. Bagthorpe. "Now I've got it! Now I know what you're up to!" Mr. Bagthorpe, in his state of acute paranoia, and being alerted by certain key words in Uncle Parker's offer, had smelled a plot. "It's a plot! A diabolical, malicious, well-laid plot!" he yelled. "Think you'll kill two birds with one stone, don't you?"
Which two birds were those, Henry?" queried Uncle Parker, delicately adjusting his cravat.
"My mother," said Mr. Bagthorpe carefully, making a real effort to control his voice and achieve Uncle Parker's kind of air of careless ease, "has transferred her affections from that horrible dead cat to your daughter. Oh, yes, don't bother to deny it. It is common knowledge in this household, and strikes the fear of God into us all. What I suggest is that you, Russell, and you, Celia, are yourselves becoming uneasy about the situation. Though I may as well say that in my opinion your fears are groundless. In my opinion, Mother is more likely to fall under the pernicious influence of your accursed daughter than vice versa."
"Russell," wailed Aunt Celia faintly, "do not let him slander darling Daisy thus."
"You will hear me out," continued Mr. Bagthorpe grimly. "You have, as I say, become alarmed by the effects of this unholy alliance between the pair of them, and with just cause. We're all alarmed. Some of us are nearly out of our minds. So what you are patently trying to do is re-transfer Mother's affection from your daughter back to another hell-ridden and malignant Ginger Tom. You will thus kill two birds with one stone. You will have put your own house in order, and at one and the same time thrown my own into purgatory." He paused for breath. His entire audience was listening, fascinated, to this laying bare of Uncle Parker's deepest motives. Jack was particularly interested in the way Mr. Bagthorpe, whether consciously or not, avoided referring to Daisy by name. He did this with Zero as well. It helped him to pretend to himself that neither of them existed. "Your scheme has failed," Mr. Bagthorpe then continued. "It has been exposed. I am all for cutting off all relations between that pair, and indeed for your confining your daughter and her everlasting Arioch to your own premises in perpetuity. But if you seriously intend to acquire some non-productive, non-milk, egg, or cheese-producing beast to add to this menage, then I am telling you here and now that the whole thing will boomerang on you, like the monkey's paw." He paused again.
"Which is to say?" prompted Uncle Parker.
"Which is to say," said Mr. Bagthorpe triumphantly, "that Mother, along with her Fortnum and Mason hamper, and her familiar, will depart hence. She will go, Russell, to yourself and Celia." The company sat and pondered this ultimatum.
In the resulting silence, Daisy's voice from somewhere outside was heard. It was saying, "Poor Fing, poor Fing, dusters to dusters and ashes to ashes." Mr. Bagthorpe groaned.